Greetings, and welcome to Research on Religion, a weekly podcast series devoted to the social scientific study of religion. I'm Anthony Gill, your host, professor of political science at the University of Washington, and distinguished senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion, the gracious sponsor of our podcast. We encourage you to visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org to post comments, ask questions, access additional material related to today's program, and to find out what is happening at the Institute. All right, let's begin.
My guest today is Linda Weiser Friedman, a professor of statistics and computer information systems at Baruch College's Zicklin School of Business and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. But wait, before any of you start to worry that our conversation will be on what statistical software package is best for dealing with endogeneity and simultaneous equation modelings, and then tune out, our topic for today actually relates to a book on Jewish humor, entitled God Laughed, Sources of Jewish Humor, that Linda co-authored with her husband, Hershey Friedman, who happens to be a professor of business at Brooklyn College at the City University of New York. The book, which one would not expect to be co-written by a statistician and a finance professor, is actually a labor of love and is filled not only with deep insights into why religious folks need humor, but also it has lots of great jokes, aphorisms, and stories. It truly is an educational and fun read, and we will link to it on our website so that you can find out more about it. We will also post a handful of humor from the book on our Facebook fan page as additional teasers, so please sign up and be a fan of us. Linda, welcome to Research on Religion.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
The obvious question that is hanging out there like the giant Stay Puft Marshmallow Man trampling New York City in the movie Ghostbusters is, how does a statistician come to write a book about Jewish humor? I did not think that statisticians had a sense of humor.
You didn't see that one coming, did you?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have to say, statisticians, mathematicians, computer scientists have a terrific sense of humor. They really, really like hermetic humor. We like in-jokes. And there are a lot of groups that have their own in-jokes that they're hoping outsiders don't get. Musicians are another one. And my husband and my interest in Jewish humor, we've always been interested in humor, but even before Jewish humor, we were looking into computer humor. We did some research on that, specifically humor that's hermetic, in that we call the secret handshake. When you tell a computer joke to another computer scientist, the laugh is, I get it, the other people in the room don't get it, I appreciate it that you thought I would get it. So there's a lot of the in-group versus out-group in these jokes. And of course, a lot of it leaks out, and there are other people that appreciate statistician humor, mathematician humor as well, but they don't get that warm, fuzzy, you're one of us feeling.
I can imagine this is going to be true with Jewish humor as well, but I have to stop and ask you for a computer or statistical joke. Do you have one?
A good one.
Yeah.
That's also what we found with Jewish humor as well. There are a lot of jokes out there. But if you can turn it around and tell it to anybody, and if any group can tell it, it's less interesting than if it's specific to that group. The really, really good computer humor is closed to a general audience.
Hmm.
Do you really want me to tell something?
Yeah, give it a try. The spotlight's on you now.
Okay. Why do programmers confuse Halloween and Christmas?
I give up. Why do programmers confuse Halloween and Christmas?
Because Oct 31 equals Dec 25. We're talking about base 8, octal, and base 10, the decimal number system. Now, even after I explain it, no one's laughing.
Yeah.
The computer people who are listening are on the floor. They're rolling.
I'm sure they are. I'm absolutely sure they are. I have to admit, I used to teach statistics, and I TA'd for a professor, and I had to fill in for him a few times, and he would always have in his notes that he would hand to me before he left town. It would have insert joke here, and then it would have a statistical joke, such as, did you hear about the statistician who drowned in a river on average 1 inch deep? Ba-dum-bump.
Yeah. There are a lot like that.
Yeah. So.
And that's usually the joke I make when I take over. When I sub for someone.
Yeah.
I'll be using his notes, and I'll always get a laugh when I say something like, "Hey, he puts his jokes in his notes."
I did that too. I read directly from his notes where it said "insert joke here." Okay, everybody, here it comes. But why a book on Jewish humor? You could have done the computer or statistical humor, but why Jewish humor?
It didn't start out as a book. We've been working on this for decades. And it started out more as, we've just been interested in all kinds of humor. Even as a very young child growing up in my family, I was interested in Jewish humor. My father is a Talmudic scholar. He's a rabbi without a pulpit, but he's ordained as a rabbi. And he had a joke for any occasion. And my husband as well. We both had this growing up. So we were always interested in it. We didn't really think we were going to write a book. Little by little, we started what we thought would be a small collection, of oddities. Look at that. There are some funny parts, starting with the Bible. And when we would tell it to our friends and our families, we'd always be in the position where we'd have to, argue it. Really? You really don't find this funny? And little by little, we started adding to it, and it became book length. It surprised us.
Hmm. Do you and your husband go out to comedy clubs? Do you do this as a hobby or profession?
We enjoy it. We don't do it as much as I would like, but we do enjoy it. We also, love finding comedy, clips of comedians on YouTube, which is somehow easier because we don't have to leave our house. But we do love that kind of environment.
I can hear it in your voice. There are certain voices that just bubble with humor and they have a lot of fun in the world. And I know in our profession in academics, you don't come across that all too often.
Well, it's unfortunate because we are a little bit, when we walk into the classroom, entertainers.
Yes, absolutely. I think that is true. I actually pull a lot of my teaching in the classroom from a previous experience I had doing stand-up comedy a long time ago with two friends of mine, Art Flader and Al Flader. And I could have gone down that path, but instead I became one of these, not-so-serious scholars.
So do you feel that you're kind of like a stand-up comedian in the classroom?
I do, because I think it actually diffuses a lot of tension on topics that are rather controversial and people might not want to discuss.
Or even boring, like statistics.
Yeah. Although I find statistics interesting, but other people do find it boring and you need humor. The other question I had about writing the book is that you wrote it with your husband. Was that a challenge at all?
Not this time.
Not this time.
We've been doing a lot of work together. We're married 42 years, so we've been working together, 41 years or something like that. And, it was a challenge at first until you find, the median. There was a lot of butting of heads. It has to be this way. It has to be that way. This is really the best way to write it. Can't you see that this is the best way to write it? But after all this time, we've come to, basically an even keel. Well, we each know, on the one hand, we know each other's strengths. We compensate for each other. And we're also at the point where if someone is really, really strong-minded about doing something a certain way, we'll go, okay, we've worked well in the past. This will probably work okay. I'll get mine next time.
Yeah, that's nice. And 40 plus years of marriage will do that. And congratulations on 40 plus years of marriage. That's great.
What?
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. 42.
Yeah,
don't overdo it.
Okay, 40 plus could sound like 48. Okay.
As I like to say, if I had done what I should have done 42 years ago, I'd be a free woman today. By the way, Hershey's sitting right here.
Uh-oh. You are funny.
So I'm okay.
Which is good. Do you guys have any favorite, this book is about Jewish humor. Do you have any favorite Jewish comedians, Jerry Seinfeld or anybody?
Well, we loved the show Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. A lot of people liked it, obviously. A lot of people who don't like it, in my opinion, it's because it's too New York and or too Jewish for them. It's not so much Jerry Seinfeld, although he's quite good. It's really Larry David, who's the driving force behind Seinfeld, the creative force. And his show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, from a Jewish humor point of view, if there were a course, if I were going to teach a course in Jewish humor this year or next year, Curb Your Enthusiasm would be required viewing. Because there are so many, there are so much of Larry David's persona in that show. The Jew who's confused by the world, there's a lot of it is a culture clash. I mean, he has a non-Jewish wife, and a lot of the humor in the show comes from the interaction and the clashes between the two worlds, and also between his point of view and the general world. In fact, there was one episode, probably what I think is probably his best episode, is the one called Survivor. I don't know if you're a fan of the show.
I watched it occasionally, but I wasn't a big fan, and I think it's because I'm a country boy and it is a New York show.
Yeah, it has that kind of attitude. But the show, the episode Survivor, in one piece of the episode, he's planning a dinner party. And he invites his rabbi, and his rabbi says, "Is it okay if I bring someone along? You haven't met him yet. He's a survivor." So Larry says, "Okay, sure, why not?" Later on, Larry talks to his father, who's coming to the dinner party, and says, "Why don't you invite your friend, who he knows is a survivor, because there's going to be another survivor there." You know, he's kind of like arranging a play date.
Mm-hmm.
And comes to the dinner party. It turns out the survivor who comes along with the rabbi is from the show Survivor, not a Holocaust survivor. And so that's where the culture clash comes from.
Yeah.
And it's just the whole setup is the funniest part of it, but of course the execution is good too. Another more current favorite comedian of ours is Modi. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No.
M-O-D-I, he goes by that name. And he's very good, by the way. In case you're into Sid Caesar and the Show of Shows, he's very much like that. He's very good with caricatures and languages and voices. And he also, at least in my opinion, his best stuff is where he highlights the conflict between being Jewish and being in the general world, the way Jews look at Jews and the way Jews think non-Jews look at Jews. But of course, in the non-Jewish arena, there's nobody like Chris Rock.
Chris Rock is the goyim.
Yeah, but
comedian.
He's still funny.
He is funny. Yeah, I do think he is funny.
He's allowed to be funny.
Yeah, I got to check out this Modi guy. I liked Sid Caesar growing up, so that was good. Bringing it back to the book, I'm curious what you wanted to accomplish in actually writing and publishing a book on Jewish humor.
Well, it's very unique. We didn't find anything like it. There are a lot of books on Jewish humor. And as I said before, we started building this collection. And anytime we talked to people, it was more or less a job of convincing them that it was humor. Because, you know, the humor that you find in the Bible is not your typical stand-up, a setup and a punchline. And just because they didn't recognize it doesn't mean that it's not humorous. I mean, just Abraham arguing with God, you can't really do that in a stand-up routine, but my goodness, there's almost nothing funnier than the idea of a mortal arguing with God and God arguing back.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the motivation behind it. You know, we've got all this material. We wanted to answer two related questions. First of all, what is Jewish humor? Can we define Jewish humor in a way that makes sense to us? It's a very subjective definition. And secondly, how far back does it go? And of course, we had the answer to that. It goes back very, very far.
All the way to Abraham, at least.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and start digging into the book. Actually, one more question on the book. Did you find it difficult to get a publisher for the book?
We actually completed the book, or at least we thought we completed the book, in 2009. And we didn't actually get a contract from a publisher until this past summer, 2013. All books are hard to place. There's no question. Everyone has stories. But this book in particular, it wasn't even easy to figure out where to send it, who would be interested in it, because it's definitely an academic book, but it's also entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a trade book. It could be Jewish humor. Or it could be something that would be used in courses. And those are two totally different enterprises. There isn't anything you can tell a publisher, it's like this one. Publishers like that. Publishers don't really like to publish something when it's in its own category, because they don't know who the market is. We did have a lot of trouble, and then thankfully we had a nibble this past summer, and we were asked to rework basically the study of Jewish humor, the first chapter, and we did that, and it's out, and we're really, really excited about this.
And I'm a bit surprised that you would have problems with this, because the book really appeals to a broad audience, and I think publishers would just want to eat that up, because it is intellectual. It has this side where you're explaining what humor is, how it's used by Jews, and provide lots of evidence that goes back deep into the Talmud and such. But it's also one that you can just sit down and read at night and have a chuckle doing it. It's a wonderful book. I wish more academic books were written this way. So
thank you. That's exactly what we thought. I think also part of the problem is what you just mentioned, that it is an academic book, but it's very readable. And again, publishers don't seem to know what to do with that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's go ahead and dig into the book. And I think just before we start off talking about Jewish humor, do you have a particular Jewish joke, aphorism, story that you would like to set the table with?
Well, I'll start off with a very broad one, because you haven't yet asked me for our definition of what Jewish humor is.
That's coming next.
And that goes into a lot of very specific sub-areas. So here's one that's kind of broad. It's also fairly well known, I think. A grandma takes her little 2-year-old grandson to the beach, and they're playing near the water, and he's playing with his little shovel, pail and shovel. And, of course, I just said grandma, but because I consider it a Jewish joke, I always think that grandma has to be a Jewish grandma.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what you think.
Okay.
All of a sudden, out of the blue, unexpectedly, a gigantic wave comes along, scoops up the little boy, and carries him out to sea. And the woman is frantic. And she starts calling in the lifeguards running around. Nobody can find the kid. Nobody knows what to do or how to save him and bring him back. And then finally, she can't think of anything else to do. She starts looking up to the heaven and praying. And then she starts negotiating and saying, I know I haven't been that good. I haven't really been going to synagogue regularly. I'm not always that great with kosher food. I'm going to be so good now. I'm going to do everything I'm supposed to do. I'll go to synagogue all the time. I'll take care of. I'll give charity. And then finally, after all this goes on a very long time, a gigantic wave comes back, deposits the child, sopping wet, on the beach right next to her. And she, of course, is not very trusting. So she examines the kid up and down every which way. Everything's fine. He's wet. But he's fine, he's healthy, he's alive. And she takes a deep breath, looks up to the heavens, and said, he had a hat!
yeah, that is funny. You can see it in the Jewish grandmother humor.
And it also fits very well with a major part of our thesis is that God is part of our humor.
Mm-hmm.
Even going back to the original sources, we argue with God. God likes it when we argue with him. Sometimes he argues back. And all humor, and you realize that because you use humor in the classroom, all humor covers the distance between the teller and the listener. And when the humor involves God, it also narrows the distance between us and God, in whatever form, you know, you want God to be. It makes for people who are happier. It makes for people who can get along with each other, we think.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of our favorite parts of Jewish humor.
That is a very great point, that it brings people closer together, and then obviously when you bring God into the humor, it brings you closer to God and
right.
in ways that you might not expect. I hadn't thought of that, and that is absolutely fascinating. So let's talk a little bit about humor. And your first chapter or two of the book, you deal with the concept of humor, and then specifically the concept of Jewish humor. So give us an idea of what humor actually is. It's one of those things, I hear it. And then what is Jewish humor?
You can't really give a good definition of humor. Humor is something that makes you smile, makes you laugh. It's kind of like the Supreme Court justice who said about pornography, "I know it when I see it." There isn't any really good definition of humor in general. In fact, our family, over the decades that we were looking at doing this research, got very, very used to the fact that we would say, okay, it's not a joke, it's warmth, it's wit, it's humor. So that started to be one of these family in-jokes. Warmth, wit, and humor of the Talmud. Warmth, wit, and humor of the Bible.
Now, what do you mean by worms?
Oh, it's exactly what I was saying before. When you have a joke involving God, let's say,
mm-hmm.
that serves to bring us closer to God and God closer to us. There's a certain warmth. There's a certain warmth there.
Oh, warmth. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you said worms.
Oh, no.
Like those things in the ground. Warmth.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my New Yorkese.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm hearing it through, you know, backwoods redneck ears. So, which brings us up to the next point, the issue of Jewish humor. And humor is oftentimes said to be very culturally specific. What is it about Jewish humor that makes Jewish humor unique?
This is something we've been studying, and we don't have a complete categorization here, but I can talk about a few things that we've found. For one thing, topic. Yes, we have humor about God. We have humor about the Holocaust and other periods of oppression. We have humor about assimilation. And the interesting thing about these topics, and that this is only one aspect of what makes humor Jewish, is that you really don't have any other people that does that. In fact, I haven't found it yet. I mean, you can never say that something doesn't exist. All you can say is that I haven't found it yet. But we're not the only ones. We know someone else who's also been doing research on genocide, on the Holocaust, and looking specifically to see if there's any other people that has humor about genocide, and couldn't find it.
Hmm.
You don't find humor among Armenians about their genocide at the hands of the Turks. There is no such thing. And when we started looking at this from a scholarly point of view, at the Jewish humor that we always grew up with, and we're thinking, well, there's a lot of assimilation humor, especially here in the U.S. We can't be the only ones. I mean, the U.S. is a melting pot. And surely blacks, who have such a culture of dark skin black, light skin black, passing as white, there must be some humor about it. Haven't found it.
Huh.
The closest you come, somebody pointed out to us, but I don't think that this is humor, is the insult where one black person might be calling another an Oreo, meaning you're acting white, you know, you're white inside, black on the outside. And in fact, when you think about that, it's really the assimilation humor is the opposite. Because with a lot of assimilation humor, the point of the humor is, it doesn't matter what you do, you're still Jewish. You're still Jewish to other Jews, and very often you're still Jewish to non-Jews, to anti-Semites. One famous, or at least one of my favorite jokes in that area, is, this might be a little subtle, I don't know, somehow not everybody laughs when I tell it, but it is still one of my favorites. Two people walking down the street, one's a Christian and one's a hunchback, and they pass a synagogue, and the Christian says to the hunchback, you know, I used to be Jewish. And the hunchback says to him, you know, that's interesting, I used to be a hunchback. So a lot of the assimilation humor is in that vein. Okay, all right. Hershey's pointing to me that I really must tell this other one. So
okay.
In the days when, it's not so far off, when Jews weren't allowed to join country clubs, Mrs. Goldberg very, very much wanted to be a member. She was newly wealthy. She had enough money. She changed her name. She took diction lessons. She changed her appearance as much as possible to look like all the other Gentile women who were members of the club, and she got in. So she's having lunch at the club, sitting around the table with a bunch of other well-bred ladies, and she asks the woman on her left, excuse me, would you please pass the butter? And the woman passes it to her, and it accidentally slips onto her lap. And Mrs. Goldberg says, "Ay vey!" Whatever that means.
To cover it.
So anyway, yeah, I actually wasn't finished with the answer to what makes a joke Jewish. The topic is only one.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's attitude, which, yes, sure, other groups have it too, but Jewish humor is very much characterized by sarcasm, gallows humor, and overcoming oppression. And we can give examples of all of these, but we'd be here longer than an hour.
And those examples, examples are actually in the book. And so I'm going to turn people back again to the book. You give a lot of evidence, or I should say jokes, humor, stories, et cetera, that are in the book, which, again, makes it a really good read.
Mm-hmm. There's wordplay. You know, there's a debate. I don't know if you know. There's a debate among scholars, mostly, I think, Christian scholars, talking about the Hebrew Bible and saying that there's no humor in it. Which we, of course, take offense at. And when we look at it, what we realize is they're not reading the Bible in Hebrew. And Hebrew is a language that lends itself to wordplay. And in addition, whenever you translate, you're going to lose certain things, especially language issues, things that are based, language-based humor. Anyhow, and of course, anything, a joke has to be Jewish if it has Jewish references, for example, if it references scripture, if it references Jewish stories. So these are the kinds of things that we looked at. We were specifically not interested in jokes that any group could tell, but that somehow Jews were telling.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't make it Jewish just because a Jew was telling a joke.
Okay. And one interesting observation that you make early on in the book is that about 80% of the successful comedians out there do happen to be Jewish. And so there must be something in this tradition that really lends itself to that character, and that, you know, people gravitate toward Jews for their humor. What's your thinking on that?
Well, I might or might not be right on this, but my thinking is that the Jews grow up and as a people too, not only as individuals, immersed in these books, whether they actually study it themselves in Hebrew school or in day school or listen to the rabbi's sermons once a week, they're immersed in the scriptures and they're immersed in the interpretations of the scriptures, which is basically the Talmud. And if there's humor there, then they have to have grown up with it. They have to be, it has to be part of their daily lives. Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know, but that's how it was for us.
It just really is woven into the fabric.
And a lot of this is also universal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only that there are a lot of Jewish comedians out there, but that what they say resonates mm-hmm. with the general population, too,
yeah.
with anybody.
No, I think that's true. Look, you mentioned that the Jewish humor goes back deep in history, all the way to Abraham. And I would like to start picking up some of the examples, because again, you mentioned that Christian scholars look at the Old Testament and say, oh, there's nothing funny there. I mean, look at the book of Job. That's not humorous.
The book of Job is not humorous. Where were you when I created the world?
I know. So this is, I want to hear about your perspective on how humor is infused through all this. And before we do that, though, if you could give our listeners a quick primer in the most critical Jewish text. And I've tried to study this time and time again, but there's all these different terms. There's the Tanakh, the Midrash, the Talmud.
Yeah.
What are all these things? Give us a quick Jewish 101 primer.
Yeah, basically the Hebrew Bible, or what Christians refer to as the Old Testament, is what Jews would call the Torah or the Tanakh. So it's the five books of Moses, it's the prophets and the writings. It's the canon. The Jewish oral law, which is now no longer oral, is what we might call the Talmud. And the Talmud started with the Mishnah, which was basically, very much laws, Jewish oral law. Then the Gemara, which is also part of the Talmud, is more or less exposition on the Mishnah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the Gemara where you have a lot of the folksy type of things, stories, how people lived their lives. There's a lot of cultural aspects to it. A lot of people divide it into two aspects, two dimensions, the law and the halacha and the agada, the law and the homiletics. So that's the Talmud. And then the Midrash, which is very, a lot of people, it's in the same category as the Talmud, but it's a different set. The Midrash is specifically exposition of biblical verses. So it's commentary. And that's why a lot of the Midrash actually, if you study the Bible directly, literally, just reading it through, you might miss some of the humor, but if you're worried you're going to miss it, the Midrash will very often point it out to you.
And that is something that the Christians are probably missing.
And it would be, I think, by the way, Christians love this stuff. I don't know about all groups,
mm-hmm.
but, We very often get email from Christian groups saying, is it okay if we put some of your material, on our website?
Yeah.
So there is a very, very strong sense of that humor is important and that it's okay to find humor in the Bible.
Yeah, by the way, speaking as a Christian, I can't speak for all Christians, but I do. I love it, and it's bringing new insights into the way I look at the reading of the Scriptures. So let's go ahead and dig into this. And instead of giving some specific sources right now, one of the things that you do that I feel is quite interesting is talk about some of the constant and recurring themes and or characters that come up dating way back, several thousand years or so. What are some of these themes as you've collected these things that you've seen that tend to be repeated in Jewish humor?
It depends on whether you're talking about the Bible or the Talmud, but all throughout the Bible, we see measure for measure, which is a kind of irony, where people think they get away with something, and then all of a sudden it turns out that they're getting back a little bit of what they gave somebody else. So there's this whole thread of measure for measure, the whole Joseph story.
Mm-hmm.
In Genesis, is run through with measure for measure. The other part of it that I mentioned, this arguing with God. Not only do we see Abraham arguing with God, but we see God talking to humans and asking rhetorical questions, and the mortals are answering as if God doesn't know. So in one place, after the sin in the Garden of Eden, God called Adam. Adam, where are you? It's like Adam doesn't know that God knows where he is. And of course, Adam should have responded, what do you mean? You can see everything. You know where I am.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing when God talks to Cain, the same thing when God talks to Balaam. And the whole story of Vellum and the Donkey is just incredibly humorous for the same reason. So you have those themes all the way through. The whole Book of Jonah, in Hebrew it's Yonah, can be seen in that way. Here's Jonah, like the worst prophet ever imaginable. He failed prophet school 101. If he was selected as a prophet, you'd think he would know that you can't run away. But the first thing he tries to do is run away from God. He finally comes to the place where he's supposed to give his prophecy, and all he says is five words. Where's the introduction? Where's who I am? I was sent by God. Here's what God wants you to do. Here's why God wants you to do it. God's going to destroy you, but why? He doesn't explain anything. And then the response is also, his prophecy was what you might call underplayed. The response is totally over the top. Even the animals had on sackcloth, which is just ridiculous. So you have those kinds of themes going all the way through the Bible. And then in the Talmud, there's a lot of, for obvious reasons. I mean, the Talmud was put together by scholars. There was a lot of interplay between student and teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot about education. There's a lot about teachers. There's a lot about scholars and scholarship. There's a lot of, throughout all of these ancient texts, scriptures and the Talmud, there's a lot of sarcasm, of mocking, of idolatry. It was a way of encouraging the people not to stray and to stay with monotheism. In the Bible, there was one point where Rachel steals her father's idol. And she and Jacob are running away. And, you know, she decides to steal her father's idol from him. For whatever reason. He comes out. What's the first thing he says to her? He knows she took it. He says, "Where are my gods? Why did you steal my gods?" If that's not one of the funniest lines in all of Scripture, I don't know what is. So yeah, you have a lot of that. That's one prime example. Oh yeah,
let me stop you a minute.
That not only did he say, "Why did you steal my gods?" but where the gods were, she was sitting on them on her donkey. It was under her bottom.
Let me probe that a little bit more, because that is interesting, and this might be one of these issues of cultural translation, or the initial Jewish Hebrew words that have a sense of wordplay in there. From a Christian vantage point, we would look at this and we would see the hubris of saying, "Where are my gods? You know, I'm above God," and we would furrow our brows and say, "My gosh, how dare he put himself above God?" Where would the humor be? I guess I'm missing that.
Where would the humor be?
Yeah.
If these are gods, how can they be stolen?
Oh. A god would be too powerful not to be...
Our view of God is somebody who's omnipotent, omniscient.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, if you can break it, if you could steal it, what kind of god is it?
I see that now. And this is very interesting, because again, this is the division here between, I think, Christians and Jews, and how we read those passages is really coming to the fore. There's a subtle thinking to that. Wow, that is pretty cool.
You know, it is a mindset. I'm not saying all Jews read that passage that way, but at this point, Hershey and I can't read it any other way.
I do see that now. Absolutely fascinating. One of the other themes I have to come back to here too, as you mentioned with the Talmud, is the issue of of scholarship of the rabbi. The learned rabbi is always esteemed in the community, and yet always seems to be the focus of a lot of derision, almost as if to bring that learned person back down to earth and reestablish some humility and bring for the wisdom of the common folk. That's a recurring theme, too, I pick up, right?
I don't know about the learned rabbi, but we have... you're talking about in modern Jewish humor or in the scriptures, the Talmud?
I guess I'm just thinking generally, yeah.
There are, you know, that's so broad, but yes, there is a very strong egalitarian sense throughout the Talmud. As long as you weren't an idol worshiper, you know, everyone had the same God, everyone had the same opportunities. There's a little bit of a difference. See, it's different in the Talmud than in the modern day, because in modern day, everyone has an opportunity to study, to be a rabbi. In the days of the Talmud, most people didn't. There were no books. There was no way to study, unless that was actually something that you did a lot of. And so there were... Somebody who was actually considered a scholar, a student or a teacher, there was something different, there was something special about him. Although I have to say that, they were not cloistered, you know, they all had to earn a living, and they it was clear what their jobs were and what they did, they had families. And the humor today, a lot of it is like that, and it's not necessarily classic Jewish humor. The one thing that I can think of, and I'm looking for now, is just a second. I can't find it. But anyway, I don't know if I can agree with it. I know what you're talking about, and there is a lot of that. For instance, the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode that I just mentioned, the survivor. The rabbi is not exactly somebody that you can respect for his learning. In fact, in that episode, he's telling Larry David it's okay for him to have an affair because his wife told him so. His wife gave him permission. Mm-hmm. And at one point, the rabbi was injured, and he yells out, "Jesus Christ!" So the humor is we're not laughing with him; we're laughing at him.
Mm-hmm.
And you do see a lot of that in television and movies today, but I don't think that harkens back to the ancient sources.
Okay, and that's interesting. I think as learning has been more democratized, the humor has been more democratized then, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Give us some other examples of where we could find humor in some of these texts, either the Tanakh, the Bible, or the Midrash or Talmud.
The Bible. Well, we already talked about a lot of them in the Bible.
Well, actually,
the Midrash.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one example. You know, the Midrash explains the Bible, so in a way, what it's doing is pointing out things about the Bible. But in this case, the Midrash has a story that didn't appear in the Bible, where the Israelites in the desert sinned by creating the golden calf. According to the Midrash, what was Moses doing when he was talking to God after that? He was trying to calm God down, and Moses was speaking on behalf of the people. And he told God, "I don't know why you're so upset. It's not that bad." And God's getting all upset. He's saying, "What? How could you say that? They created an idol. They're worshiping it. They're not worshiping me." And Moses said, No. "This idol that they made, this golden calf, is going to be your assistant. You have so much work. You have so many things to do, often at the same time. You have to be everywhere at once. He'll do some of your jobs. You know, it'll make things easier for you." And this is in the Midrash. This is not, you know, some stand-up comics routine.
Hmm.
And then God says to him, "How can you say such a thing? It can't do anything. It's nothing." And Moses responds, "Well, in that case, why are you so upset?"
I, This is something that definitely is not within the Christian tradition. And, you know, now that I start to think back about some of these, you know, discussions between Moses and God or Abraham and God, and just the mere fact of a conversation going on has some sense of humor, or almost lampooning of the human condition, I think, which is very funny. Okay, I like that.
One of my favorite lines in the Talmud is have in front of me. So I'll read it directly, although it is a translation. Rabbi Kahana once hid under his mentor's bed. His mentor was Rav, who was very, very one of the greats. His personal name was Abba, but everybody called him Rav. And he was hiding under his bed because he wanted to hear what happened when Rav would have relations with his wife. This is in the Talmud. I'm not making this up.
Mm-hmm.
And so he heard him, you know, chit-chatting, bantering, joking around with his wife, and then engaging in sexual intercourse. And he just couldn't hold back. He's under the bed. Okay, he's there. You would think at least he'd know enough to be quiet. No. He says, it would seem that the mouth of Abba, meaning Rav, has not sipped of this broth before. In other words, did you never do? Are you a little teenager? You know that this is the first time you're having sex with your wife, and he just couldn't hold himself back apparently. But that's not my favorite line. My favorite line of all time is that then Rav calls out, "Kahana, is that you?" And Kahana, this is not taking this, you know, humorously. Kahana's very serious. He says, it's all Torah. It's all Torah. I have to learn. I have to, you know, there was another story of someone who followed his rabbi into the bathroom. I have to learn. It's all Torah. And, you know, Jews have this notion that the Torah is all about how you live your life.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, studying what my seventh grade teacher used to say, you know, the Bible stories. But you know, in general, very, very widespread, how you live your life.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. We have about 10 minutes left, and I want to actually probe some of the ideas of Jewish humor. One of the questions I had written down here was, to what extent can non-Jews really learn from Jewish humor? And I actually find myself having that question answered for me every time you speak, because I'm learning so much of a way of looking at, you know, for us, the Old Testament in ways I had never thought about before. So let me probe the issue of cultural boundaries a little bit more. How firm are these cultural boundaries between Judaism or Jewish humor and the non-Jewish humor? I mean, are these things that you talked at the beginning of the interview about in-jokes, specifically with computer, you know, base 9 computer programming language. Yeah, I didn't understand that at all. But to what extent does Jewish humor really permeate some of these cultural boundaries?
It's pretty permeable. There are some jokes which I have found, if I tell them to Jews, they'll laugh. It might be a sardonic laugh, but it's a laugh. And if I tell it to non-Jews, I don't get that much of a response. It could be because it's me. Maybe they're afraid to laugh because it's a Jew telling the joke. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll give you one example of that. In a small town in Eastern Europe, before Passover, all the Jews are gathered in a synagogue because there was a horrible, horrible report that came out that there was a Christian girl was murdered. And so everybody was concerned, since it was before Passover, about a pogrom because of the blood libel, that the surrounding communities would attack them, saying that they killed the Christian girl in order to use her blood. And so this doesn't start out as a joke at all.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, somebody runs into the synagogue, goes to the front, talks to the president and the rabbi, And then the president turns to the congregation and says, "Brothers, sisters, I have wonderful, wonderful news. The murdered girl was Jewish."
And that, yeah, that sounds like such a morbid joke, but it has this, you know, sense of persecuted history, is that, oh, good, we're not going to be persecuted now because one of our own died. And that brings me to this other question about, to what extent can outsiders tell Jewish jokes? And,
you know, there's been research on that with one particular joke, maybe, I'm sure more, but here's one that I'll mention. Two Jews are in front of the firing squad in whatever period of oppression we're talking about. And one of them says, you know, he's making all kinds of demands. You know, "I want a blindfold, I want a cigarette, I want a last meal." And the other one elbows him and says, "Shush, don't make trouble."
Yeah.
So that joke, when a Jew tells it to another Jew, they'll laugh. When a non-Jew tells it to another non-Jew, especially if they're using caricature and accents, it's anti-Semitic.
Yeah. Yeah. You've investigated humor a lot. And one of the things, actually, I have to go back, you talk about gallows humor and specifically jokes about the Holocaust, right? This, for a Christian audience sitting out there saying, oh my gosh, they have jokes about the Holocaust. This is one of the worst historical events ever. I mean, it came close to genocide of an entire population. This, you know, the images that we see of this, it's just burned in our memory. This is one of the worst things. How could you have humor about the Holocaust?
I have just two words for you. Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
The producers, which when he first did it, it was, you know, a long time ago, it was closer to the time of the Holocaust. There were, I don't know if there was, you know, anything major in the media in terms of humor of the Holocaust before him. There were jokes. The Jews were making jokes to each other about it. But Mel Brooks actually said specifically, "That's how I got even with Hitler." What can I do? You know, I used humor. The whole thing was just so ludicrous, singing "Springtime for Hitler," and then the pan of the audience faces being totally shocked. That's exactly what he was going for, that kind of shock. There's a whole book on Holocaust humor by a friend of ours, Steve Lipman. I don't know if you've read it.
No, I haven't.
Called "Laughter in Hell."
Hmm.
So yeah, there was an awful lot of humor on the Holocaust.
And it is such an interesting thing to think about today. And I'm going to come back to what Mel Brooks recently said about humor in contemporary America here in a little bit, as a way of probing how humor has changed over time. But when Mel Brooks says this, "It's a way for me to laugh at Hitler," there must be a purpose for humor. And, it, you know, especially in Jewish history, you've gone through so many pogroms and sufferings that humor is a way to release a lot of tension, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of pain. Is that what you see?
So you have a lot of people who use humor to overcome oppression. You know, Jews aren't the only ones that have gallows humor. But when we have it, it's, you know, specifically Jewish. There was a, in the Talmud talks about the prophet Elijah talking to Rabbi Baruch HaHazah in the marketplace. And they're looking around. And Rabbi Baruch asks Elijah, "All of these people over here, any of them have a share in the next world? In other words, are any of them going to heaven?" And Elijah, who had an inn with the big guy, looks around and he said, "These two are destined for the world to come." So Rabbi Baruch approached them and asked them, "What do you do?" And they replied, "We are merrymakers." Basically, they were jesters. "We cheer up people who are depressed." So jesters go to heaven. In fact, the title of our book, the working title of our book before we got a publisher, was "Jesters Go to Heaven."
I like that. I like, as somebody who uses humor quite a bit, and I know I annoy a number of my academic colleagues with perhaps my overuse of it, I think I'm going to have a t-shirt printed with that that says jesters go to heaven, or at least go to important conferences, which actually might be hell, I think. I'm not quite sure. I want to come back to Mel Brooks, that you brought him up, and this whole, you know, notion of Holocaust humor and gallows humor that, you know, the producers, that was, he wrote that and made that film, what, early 70s, right?
When was the first one, the early one? Was it 70s, 60s? The first producers. I don't know, but it was quite a while ago.
Yeah, it was quite a while ago. And Mel Brooks was recently quoted in the news, oh, I think a couple months ago, talking about our contemporary culture and how heightened sensitivities have made it very difficult to tell a lot of jokes. In fact, I think he made specific reference to one of his other famous movies, Blazing Saddles, and he said that Blazing Saddles could not have been made in today's current environment. And he, I mean, the point that he was making is that the rise of political correctness and of heightened sensitivities have just, in many ways, left society today humorless.
Everybody is looking for a reason to get angry.
Yeah.
Instead of just enjoying the humor. I'm shocked sometimes when I watch reruns of Seinfeld that they were able to get away with some of the things that they did. Maybe today they wouldn't be able to, or All in the Family, Archie Bunker. I don't really know how different that show would be if it were on today. I have one joke which. And also the other thing is that humor, not only because of the cultural environment, sometimes humor doesn't resonate anymore for other reasons. You know, here's an example. Actually, this joke became popular because it appeared on a computer listserv for humor. So that's how I found out about it. There's a Jew and a Scot went out to eat at a very, very posh restaurant. And they had all kinds of expensive foods. They had expensive wines. And at the end of the meal, the waiter comes over, and the Scot says, "I'll take that," meaning the bill. And he paid, and they left. And the next day, the newspaper headlines said, "Jewish ventriloquist found dead in alley." So I tried telling that one to my kids in school, because they're young, the young people, and they laughed. They figured it was funny, but they didn't really get it because they no longer have this cultural reference that we had in the U.S. When I was growing up, that Scots are stingy.
Yeah.
They just didn't understand it. And then I told the same joke to a Scot. And I told him that no one laughed at it anymore. He said, "Really? I didn't know nobody knows that anymore." So a lot of it is what you bring to the joke, which is really what we were talking about before in terms of being culturally specific.
Another thing I'm curious about, and we talk about this issue of, you know, political correctness and what Mel Brooks was thinking about. A lot of Jewish humor is aimed at Jews, and they lampoon Jews and other Jews. And, you know, Seinfeld is making fun of a lot of Jewish culture. Has there been any pressure upon Jewish comedians to basically step back a little bit and say, "Hey, you're using this humor, and you're just reinforcing stereotypes of us"?
There is some of that. I wouldn't say there's pressure, because I don't think anybody has really come out with a position paper on it.
Yeah.
But you do have among individuals where you'll tell a Jewish mother joke and they'll laugh, and then they'll go, "You know, you shouldn't really tell that to non-Jews." And you know, I can see that. In a somewhat related, I'll tell you the best telling of a Jewish joke. I'm not going to tell you the joke itself. The best telling of a Jewish joke. The couple that we know, their super came over to fix something in their apartment in California. And he's chatting with them, and he said, "You guys are from New York, right?" And they said, "Yeah." And he said, "I have a lot of jokes about New York. There was once this," and he stops for a minute. He said to them, "Wait, you're not Jewish, are you?" And they said, "Yeah, we are Jewish." He goes, "That's not that funny." So that's what we call meta humor.
Yeah, and it is interesting because, you know, humor could be a way to actually pull a lot of people together and build community, but in many ways...
It could be a way to push people apart.
It could be.
Right?
It could be.
That's the nice thing about this whole approach to humor that's about God. I mean, if God can laugh and if he can allow himself to be bested, you know, Moses in the story I told you before from the Midrash, Moses basically played gotcha with God. And God was okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's part of the tradition, then certainly human beings, no matter how different we think we are or how different the groups are, we should be able to get along.
That is a great lesson to pull from that. Let me close with one other question. I've learned so much from my discussion with you today and also in reading your book, and I, again, will point people back to the book God Laughed. And but as a scholar, I always know that in writing a book, there's always a process of learning, that even when you think you have the answer and you start to put pen to paper, as you write, you start to learn more things. You start to change your mind. It's an ongoing process. What big things have you taken away from the writing of this book?
Actually, I think I gave the answer before the question.
Yeah, you
may. This started out as a collection, as I said. It started out as a small collection, then a larger collection, and then like you do with all collections, you start categorizing it and create a framework. But what kept on coming up over and over and kept on resonating with us repeatedly is what it means to be able to argue with God and what that means about the relationship with God, with a personal God. God is, you know, if we can see God talking to people and allowing them to argue with him in the Bible and in the Talmud, then not only should we be able to do that today, which brings us closer, it helps to hopefully make us more godly at the same time that it makes our the way we view God closer to us. Like, you know, one of the family, which I know some people might consider a little bit sacrilegious, but that's the way we like to think of him. And at the same time, like I said before, if we have that attitude towards God, we put God in our humor, we argue with him, we complain to him, sometimes we take him to court in our jokes and stories, then we're still able to come out saying, you know, we can still be people of faith, and we can still believe that we can still be believers, then why can't we do the same thing with other human beings? And as we know, very often the worst enmities between people are for people who are very close to each other. So what we really have to work on, in our opinion, I mean, this is what we took out of it, is saying this: if God can do it, we can do it. God doesn't get upset by a simple joke. He doesn't get upset by arguing. He doesn't get upset by that. Sometimes he likes it, and in fact, often in the Talmud, God laughs after these disagreements. So we should be able to laugh too. A disagreement is just a disagreement.
Well, that is a wonderful way to close, and I'll give you a hearty amen on that lesson. Yep. My guest today has been Linda Weiser Friedman. Linda, thank you for being on Research on Religion.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Research on Religion. To learn more about today's topic, participate in a discussion about what you've heard, or browse other podcasts, please visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org. And if you like what we're doing, please tell a friend. We'd appreciate the company. See you next week.